Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here with Sam Whittaker. And unfortunately, Simon's not here. He's come down with a bit of sickness, but I'm thinking it's more a bit of the blues.
Yeah.
After a very disappointing end to the Rugby World Cup and a very disappointing result in the final. What's your temperature at? How are you feeling?
Maybe it's not a blocked nose from Simon, but just some dysfunction around the eyes. He's still watering up. Yeah. It was pretty... That boy wears his heart on his sleeve, and it was on his sleeve on the weekend, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. He's a proud All Blacks supporter, and he's hurting right now.
Yeah, I think we all are hurting as well. It was I went out after the game, and just like the amount of conversations that you'd have around or like with people or bumping into. I bumped into a few guys, a few boys from Silverdale, young footy players, and they were talking about it. It's just the elephant in the room when they're talking about the game, and you're just waiting for someone to bring up, what did you think of the ref?
It's
interesting. It's a shame that it sort of played out the way that it played out. But anyway, we will get on to that in a minute. First of all, we'll kick it off with the International Rugby League and just some accountability around that one. I had New Zealand to score 7+ points in either half at $3.50, which went down. And I had Asako. I jumped on that bandwagon again for 12+ points at $4.50. And I went down on both of them, unfortunately.
I went Kiwis to cover the +7.5 money line, which they did not. And then I also had Kiwis just head to head, which obviously they didn't get that done either. So
It really wasn't a game that I predicted to end like this. The Kangaroos obviously defeated them 36-18, which we'll sort of discuss a little bit more in this week's preview, where we actually take them on again this Saturday at 5 p.m. and that's at FMG Stadium. Like we'd said last week, this was really a game that there wasn't much riding on it, but it was a Kiwis team heading into it with a lot of momentum and sort of maybe just a little bit more to play for in terms of the consistency throughout the lineup, which is what we saw having Australia ultimately resting Haas and Tino. Yeah. And as soon as I saw that, my eyes kind of lit up and thought, okay, we're going to win that edge up front.
Me too.
It's obviously not really what we saw. And a 36-18 scoreline is not the reflection of what I thought was going to happen.
No, and it's not really a reflection of the game because it was a much more even contest than the score would suggest. They just had better threats in the strike zone and more grain-breaking talent. That's really what it comes down to. If you look at the stats, it was similar in possession, 51% to 49% for Australia. Same completion rate, 82%. Same penalty count, 5 each. The difference was they had 7 line breaks to our 3, 30 tackle breaks to our 22, and 240 more run meters than us. So
it's crazy when you're looking down that as well, and you also see that we had 7 offloads to their 1 in terms of controlling the tempo and playing off that and just ultimately couldn't.
Yeah, it was really unfortunate because we were right in this game. The score suggests that it is a bit of a blowout. Like, obviously, they went past the line that I tried to get them to cover. But, there was 2 late tries that really extended the gap. It was actually a good quality contest. Their best game breaker, who I thought was outstanding, was Hamiso Tabuai-Fadou.
Yeah.
94 run meters, 3 line break assists, 2 try assists, 4 tackle breaks. And this is a big one. 17 tackles on 0 missed tackles. And I thought their defense on the edges was good all night because Katoni Staggs also had 0 missed tackles. And if you combine them both, that's 36 makes with 0 missed tackles. So outstanding work from their centers. And it's good to see Hamiso continuing the form he showed through Origin and through the season in that department as a center, because he's starting to show himself as a Swiss Army knife as an attacker and as a defender.
And on the international stage as well, is just being incredible. We saw what he did in Origin and he just cut it apart. And now we're seeing that again in the Kangaroos jumper. And it's crazy, this trajectory that he's been on from before this year on that Cowboys team. They weren't sort of sure who it was even going to be. Was it Drinkwater, Hammer. I've got a tongue twister on that one. And then we've seen what he's done with the Dolphins this year. Yeah. We've seen what he's done in Origin and again in the international stage. Now they take on, we take on Australia again this weekend in the final. In terms of around the haka pregame, it's been interesting to see what's been happening with that. Ronaldo went straight at Nico Hines. I would have liked to have seen maybe them rein back on a little bit of the flair and left it for that FMG Stadium in Waikato.
Agreed.
Hit it with a banger just in one go. Yeah. It's kind of a little bit, it's funny going from the All Blacks and the way that the haka is presented and taken as opposed to then league, where there's just this disregard for any boundaries. It's just straight up into the face.
There's no halfway mystical wall that's keeping them separated. You can just go straight up into their face. We've seen it on highlights throughout the years. We've seen the highlight of Willie Mason just chirping at the Kiwis in their face. It's kind of cool. You don't want them to start forcing, and I agree, they should probably have just saved it for this final, because now they're going to do it again, and it's going to be like, oh, we saw this last week. Let's just chill out, boys. But, you know, it's still, you love to see that passion, especially at international footy, because this is meant to be the pinnacle. I know it doesn't get promoted as much as the NRL or State of Origin, but in terms of talent on the field, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. As for this weekend, look, we discussed the matchups and the stats sort of all around it last weekend, and look, the Wallabies got another one up on us, and that hasn't changed that much. But one thing I do want to point out though is Cam Murray. He's now scored 6 tries in his last 6 games for Australia, which I thought was completely wild. So he's a little smoky to build into any sort of multis this weekend if you dabbling around and want to boost the odds up a bit there. But,
and it would be to break the record, because he's equal at the moment. It would be to break the forward record.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. Look, I've got to back the Kiwis again in this one. It's been a running theme on the show in terms of loyalty and that, but being
or
at home,
thereof sometimes.
Being at home and in the mighty Waikato, I do believe that we have the squad that can take it to this Kangaroos team and really challenge them, but the Kangaroos, having rested those monsters in Tino and Haas, it's going to be a pretty tough ask bringing that pack out, having had that week off. Where do you sort of lie in terms of the matchup for this one?
Yeah, so you've got Australia as the big favourite, as you would expect after last week's result, $1.23, and New Zealand as the underdog, $4.30, with the line sitting at a big plus 13.5. And yeah, the fact that Tino and Payne Haas weren't there and they still were able to get it done and was still really deadly in the strike zone and it kind of outplayed us both on defense and on attack, kind of gives me concerns. Mm. I look at those stats that I brought up earlier, though, and I do think we can keep this close if we mitigate the mistakes and mitigate the penalties, because a lot of those penalties that we conceded, I know we had the same amount of penalties, but they were relieving penalties where Australia was able to get into the strike zone where they were so deadly throughout the match. So if we can keep those under control, we can make this match close. I don't even know if I should say this, but I'll just be honest. I'm going to say Australia wins the head-to-head. Yep. But my play, I'm going to keep some loyalty. I'm going to take the New Zealand plus 13.5 money line at $1.92. They've given me about 6 more points this week, so I'll jump on it.
Yeah, look, we've got no odds up in terms around try scoring and that. This is being filmed on a Monday. I'm going to lock in early Mulitalo and Hamiso Tapuwai-Fidoh, both anytime try scorers, like into the Kiwis at a plus 12.5. I'm joining you on that one with just taking a nice little spread. And I think Mulitalo is going to go in. The Hammer, he's been proven to be that guy in these kind of games. Oh, so that's where I'm putting my money.
Such an opportunist. Whenever there's like a loose ball or a grubber through, he's right there to score a try. So great bit.
Moving into the Rugby World Cup now. Okay. So England, they defeat Argentina 26-23 to take third place in this year's Rugby World Cup. Interesting game that was, watching it. I mean, look, we're all sitting there and it's not something that's glorified and we're all waiting for. It's just a little bit of light Saturday watching. It was a shame that Argentina didn't manage to get the result in that one. England, they went off barnstorming early and I thought that this was actually going to be a game that's sort of become a little bit of a landslide, but Argentina ultimately turned it into a scrappy sort of affair and managed to scramble themselves back into it somewhat. And look, they gave themselves a chance to win, but ultimately it is a little bit of a shame. World rugby rankings are going to be interesting to see how this reflects on this as well, in terms of if we are actually going to see a third and fourth from it. But yeah, what did you take away?
Yeah, my takeaway was that other than the start that England had, this game was very flat. You could tell these teams were a little bit down after their semi-final losses. And it was a very mistake-ridden and flat affair. Because England were so flat and Argentina started coming back with some opportunistic tries, I thought they were going to turn this result on its head, because England really stagnated in that late first to second half. But obviously, England with that charge down straight after the Argentinian try, ultimately the difference in this game, got it done. But yeah, it was a real weird watch, because I was watching it and I was like, man, both teams are flat, making mistakes. But the crowd was kind of not really interested. Yeah. All the games have had really boisterous crowds doing waves and being real vocal and loud. But there was a little bit of that at the start, and then it kind of tapered off after there was a bit of mistake. So it is really a question in the future whether these games are necessary for me. Because,
I agree.
You know, you got two teams battling it out for the championship of the world
mm.
and they're losing and then they have to settle for a bronze, it's going to be hard for any team to live for that. And I thought Argentina would be the team that sort of wants it the most, being yeah. a lesser nation who doesn't usually get these opportunities. But yeah, even then, they took it hard and showed in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Now, moving on to the final, South Africa, they ultimately defeat the All Blacks 12-11 to win this year's Rugby World Cup. I called a final score of 23-19. I had Will Jordan anytime try score at $2.25. I had Adi Savea anytime at $3.50. And when that little chip kick from Jordy Barrett went over it in the first half, I thought, fuck, here we go. I did have a try bet. Either team wins by under 7.5 points at $2.50, which very went nice. In there. And my multi obviously went down. Will Jordan anytime total points over 34.5 in the All Blacks head-to-head at $3.75.
Yeah, and I was also back in the All Blacks. I had them 1-12 to win this one. And then my score was 23-19. I held hands with you there. So obviously a lot less of a scoring game than we expected. But yeah, really. I would say sad stuff, but I actually found myself all Sunday like pissed off.
Yeah.
Like even the Ngannou Fury fight, I was like, fuck these entrances taking so long, pissing me off. And I was like, man, I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
I really am like that meme where it's like, you guys are fully adult men and you're getting wound up by guys throwing a ball around. I'm like, yeah, I'm that dude.
Honestly, you weren't the only one because it was a bit of a weird day. Yeah. Into the game. We'll spend a bit of time talking about this. I've broken it down into South Africa, the officiating for one, and then I just want to end on the actual All Blacks. I'm not going to talk too much in their performance as such, but just end on something that I wanted to say from them, and we'll just jump in between talking about it all. But if I'm going to start off with South Africa, despite what happened in the game, unrelated to the players, which we'll talk about soon, this team should not have anything taken away from them in terms of the final result. They controlled the game well in a manner that suited them. They lost their specialist hooker to injury very early on in the match and were reliant on quick throws and fast lineouts whenever possible. They took points whenever they were on offer and a defensive system that countered our strike extremely well. I thought Jesse Creel, he had an absolutely fantastic game. They played super flat with great line speed. It wasn't so much a traditional umbrella, which gave the All Blacks a kicking option. It was just perfect width and perfect timing. We've really got front football to link with our strike. And whenever that link did come, it was just under constant pressure, which we saw multiple occasions, that link between Richie Mwanga, Bowden Barrett trying to get it to Will Jordan, and there was just no time. Rico and Jordy, I thought that they adapted quite well playing a short game in the middle, which began to penetrate their line and lay that first phase platform really well, but they just continued to suffocate us, and ultimately they played a style that adapted to the game, adapted to what was happening throughout, and just managed to keep going on. Look, I'm not going to take anything away from it all. It was impressive what they did. I think the main talking point, though, is losing, obviously, Malcolm Marks earlier in the competition, and again, losing your specialist hooker in this, and having to rely on a guy that isn't his position. They don't have a functioning line-out, which is exactly what South Africa did, and they managed to adapt and play to that.
Yeah, and this was like the story of their tournament was adaptation, because, you know, if you get through three finals games in a row by 1 point each time, you're obviously doing something to turn these results in very close contests. And they didn't always play very good in these results as well. They didn't play good against England, and they still managed to get that result in the last 10 minutes. So, yeah, I do have to give them credit, but also I watched the way they play, and I think they didn't do a whole lot, mainly on attack, to win this game. Obviously, they took their kicks when they were on offer. And
One thing that frustrated me a lot was restarts.
Yeah.
And the amount, I wanted to sit down and actually figure out how many times they did take a shot at, or a drop kick at goal off a restart. That was quite frustrating to watch as well. I get it's 3 points potentially just on offer straight away and a restart in terms of a percentage play, but I do agree it's tough to watch.
Well, this was going to be my final point, but I think I'm just going to piggyback it off what you're saying now. This wasn't a good promotion for rugby that South Africa won this game due to the style that they play. All Blacks, for all their flaws, they play a really beautiful brand of rugby. And credit to South Africa because they turned it into their game, which is a very ugly style. And I will give credit to their defense, which was outstanding. You brought up Jesse Creel, who was good in that link position. I'm talking more inwards. And Peter Steph Dutoot obviously got man of the match. But he was outstanding with 28 tackles and not a lot of missed tackles either, man. He was really hitting and sticking.
Every single one of those that hit Jordy Barrett, that stuck as well. And it looked like they were hurting.
Yeah, he's not a little boy. He's number seven, which I think they treated as a blindside, which is traditionally your bigger flanker. But even then, he's played a bit of lock. So he's an absolute monster. They did well to disrupt our strong lineout. To your point, they even got two steals, I believe. So that is really impressive considering how strong our lineout's been. And we lost one throughout the tournament before this final.
Yeah, exactly.
So, man, it's credit to them for that. And then a somewhat contentious aspect of the game due to the officiating, but we'll get to that in a second. They still earned seven turnovers.
Mm.
And I think we earned three, which obviously there were some occasions, the Adi Savier occasion where could have gone our way. But, you know, they were still attacking the breakdown effectively. And I think that piggybacks off their defense as well. Although they did play well, I don't think this was our best performance considering the momentum and the performances we've had in the previous games. I thought our phase play in the first half especially was like very uninspiring. And you say they don't have like a traditional umbrella, but there was still a guy that was sort of jamming in.
Yeah.
I know the line speed was real good, so there wasn't a whole lot of space to work with, but maybe just bringing like a little bit more depth and then employing, it's also hard when you have 14 men to get that extra man to employ a sweeper going around, but to do some of those things and have a little bit more depth, I just saw that there was space that we could have exploited because they were really coming up and they were really leaving a big gap between their winger and their last man in. So
it's just so tough when you're playing a team like South Africa that is so physical in the confrontation. And quite often we weren't making the gain line. We were making the gain line off that set phase, especially off line out in terms of Jordy Barrett and Rico. And that's why we're getting a somewhat quick recycle around the corner. But man, they just dominated us up front.
The point of contact was incredibly good for them as well. Absolute strong in every contact.
Exactly. And when we're trying to roll around the corner, when you're not getting that gain line, it's so much faster to move or so much longer to move around that corner. And when they're dominating the contact and they're constantly attacking the breakdown, it is so hard to play that fast sort of game to get it out to the edge. And they played it perfectly.
Yeah, they did. Their defense was outstanding. I also just thought our execution was pretty poor as well, compared to where we'd been leading up into this final. This game was ours to be had. I know we had a red card, a yellow card, and all sorts of things going against us that, you know, ultimately gave South Africa the game. But even with all those factors, we still could have won this game because even when momentum was shifting in the second half, there were some crucial drop balls, like that drop ball off the scrum. I think Jordy hit a short ball and it kind of bobbled out.
Richie had one as well.
Adi Savia obviously forced the pass, which I was mad about at the time. I've had a couple days to reflect. I'm less pissed off about. But, you know, he did force it. He did not need to throw that ball. It was hard to get his hands up over the contact and throw the hard ball. And we had front foot. If he had just gone down recycled, it could have come at a different phase in the game. So just a little bit disappointing that we did those things in such a crucial game. But, you know, at the end of the day, credit to South Africa.
Yeah.
That's what I'm basically going
to
say.
It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough to sit here.
There's so much cope in my voice right now, but
As for the officiating, now, for me, it wasn't just the Wayne Barnes shit show out there. It was a perfect example of what world rugby should be worried about. Yeah. There were so many conflicting calls throughout the game. I agree if we can use the TMO to achieve a near perfect game, then go for it. But it was slow. There were stops constantly throughout it. There was conflicting calls throughout the match. I felt Barnes didn't even have the power to officiate the game in some points from his own, and which just created a complete confusion on some calls. And it almost seemed like he was trying to chase the game as well. The penalty to Adi, for one, the knock-on from Faf as well. I only bring those up because Aaron Smith's try was disallowed after they came multiple phases back to the knock-on that happened at the line-out. It was a knock-on.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
It was a knock-on, but it was stated by Wayne Barnes on multiple occasions as he was running. No knock-on, it's clear. Yeah. And for me, when he's sitting out there, what are the touch judges doing throughout this match? And if that's going to be a call that's made, then when that stop comes after that scrum, that TMO needs to interact and bring that back to Faf's knock-on.
Yeah.
All I'm asking is straight for away consistency.
Yeah.
If we're consistent with calls that gets brought back to Faf's knock-on from multiple phases, like I'd said earlier, and I feel like we're creating a little bit of a blanket, and it's okay if we miss calls because the TMO is going to come on. out and get involved. And that's happened a lot throughout this Rugby World Cup.
Ben O'Keefe does that. He does. Exactly. He's a great referee, but he does allow 50-50 knock-ons to sort of get reviewed.
Exactly. Let it flow. Yeah. And all we're asking for is consistency. For me, the red card ruling, World Rugby needs to introduce a 20-minute system again into the game, because I feel like this call being, Sam Kane's card being upgraded to red, would have fit perfectly, I think, in the format of the 20-minute suspension with the player reintroduced. Yeah. I don't think it met the reckless disregard for them to have to suffer 50 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that was just too much. It should have been 20 and 15 restored with 30 to go. It's not reckless, like I'd said. And then you introduce the one with Khaleesi, and you can't stay consistent with it, because consistency would have showed to the letter of the law that that should have potentially been upgraded to red if you're looking at just sort of pen to paper kind of thing. But when you're introducing the reckless disregard, the factors that are involved with it, I do agree that it was the right call and it shouldn't have been upgraded. Lastly, in a game where it was just constantly, you're trying to adapt to rules to keep the game fast, entertaining and safe, it needs to be far more consistent and as consistent as possible. I get it can't always be the perfect game, but I do, funny I'm bringing it up now, I do like the way that Ben O'Keefe controls it compared to Barnes, and the way that it's sort of and the way that he lets it go and they work together off that. It was just, it was a tough game of footy to watch.
Yeah, it was. And you know, South Africa did make that happen, and I'm glad you talked a lot on the officiating, because I knew Simon had a lot of strong takes on that, so I was going to kind of let either him or you talk on that. But I do have some takes on the cards. In terms of consistency from the adjudication of what they've been doing throughout the World Cup, Khaleesi's, I just knew they weren't going to give it a red. They were not going to upgrade it because of the mitigating factors that they've been ruling on all World Cup, and that there were multiple tacklers involved in the contact.
Yeah.
And then this shoulder came in to the face. And I do look at what happens, especially in the slow-mo with Sam Kane, him being upright and him being straight contact to the jaw. I did have a feeling that they might upgrade it, watching it in slow-mo replay.
Yeah.
I did have a feeling, because there's no mitigation. It is a one-on-one tackle. He is upright. But I think that mitigation language needs to be kind of reviewed, because when you watch it in fast motion, the contact is to the face, but it's not too bad. Like, it's not too aggressive. There isn't forward force going through it. He isn't trying to follow through and take his head off like Fritz Lee did to that guy from Northland.
There's no reckless disregard for player safety. It's a
beautifully
mistake.
Beautifully put. So I disagree. I agree that with the consistency of what they've been calling throughout the World Cup and the slow-mos and whatnot, Tom Curry had a similar incident, it is probably a red card to the letter of the law they've been adjudicating through the World Cup. But do I agree that that is the punishment that should be put out on that sort of contact? No, I don't agree. And it goes back to your point about maybe reducing the penalty of a red card, or maybe even introducing a different card system, like, not to be gimmicky, but an orange card maybe.
I've said that for ages as well. And World Rugby, I think, need to introduce what we have in Super Rugby. It's frustrating playing these rules as well and it not being on the international format. But having your yellow and having your red, that player has not showed a reckless disregard for player welfare, but has made a reckless mistake.
Yeah.
And he's punished by, his team's punished by 20 minutes, and he's not allowed to return to the field afterwards. But like you said, you have an orange card, or just call it a black card.
Yeah,
or
black
something.
And
that is what a red card is defined as now.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, like I said earlier, we suffered for 50 minutes for a reckless mistake, not reckless disregard for another player, which is a shame. In terms of Wayne Barnes's officiating and the consistency, I mean, the one that is just glaring out is when Adi Savea has the turnover. He takes his hands off the ball, goes straight for it. You can see it in the replay. He clearly releases. He was involved with the tackle. There was a clear release, and then he goes for the ball. As he goes to confirm with Wayne Barnes what the penalty was for, he gives him the message of, yeah, I did think you were okay, but I just didn't see enough.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
It's kind of like he's trying to be too aware. Like he's like, oh, I might have made a mistake then, so I'm going to be too honest. You just got to kind of ride with your decisions, whether it be right or wrong. It's not a good look to admit that you're wrong on a global stage, especially in a World Cup final. So, Wayne, you just got to drop the friendly act and just kind of, well, first of all, forget the whole what you look like and how you portray yourself, make the right calls. Exactly. First and foremost. But even so, don't, it's kind of unprofessional to say, I was wrong, you were right, you're the player, you know? So
it's tough. It's a weird one. Then, yeah. And again, or end on the assistant referees.
Okay. What are they even doing?
Exactly. We've said this a lot. We've said it in league as well, just in terms of the full pass that we obviously had with Reece Walsh in the Warriors game. We just need to see something better from that. I mean, when you're missing calls at a scrum that's on the 5 meter line and the trams line on one side, and then you're missing another knock on the other side, like there's two of you there. You might as well chuck
a red badge shirt on those guys and make them face the other way. That's about how useful they are.
The guy on the bloody the sky camera on his little Uniso or whatever it is.
Give him a flag.
Yeah, he'll do good. And he's got some video evidence on him as well.
Just before we move on, there was one other card that I thought was quite contentious, and that was the first one to Shannon Frizzell.
Yeah.
In which, like, I do believe that should be penalized because it was an incorrect clean and he did fall onto the dude's leg, and it is somewhat dangerous, but I think it's more careless and incidental rather than just straight an attempt at foul play. And I think a yellow card was perhaps an overreaction and probably should have just been a penalty.
I think to call it careless is the poor choice in words. The movement that he was going for was he wasn't able to get a clear out on the jackler by coming in underneath him. And what he's taught to do is you're taught to come over, grapple and bear roll, and he's missed that bear roll when coming in, and he's gone to do it real quick and he's landed straight on the leg. It's not
the careless and just incidental.
Exactly.
It's completely incidental.
So he hasn't come in and aimed straight for that leg with a reckless. So I do agree with that as well. And
that's an extra 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And right at the start of it as well. And I mean, then you've got the whole Chislin Colby thing that was at the end.
Well, that was fair.
Exactly. But it's just
funny that the only yellow card for them, we find it completely fair.
Yeah.
Second yellow card.
One last thing on the officiating is I will reward our good friend, and that is the Kiwi punter. He put up a tip saying that 3+ cards throughout the match, and I thought, shit, I don't know about that one, but that's exactly what
it's
we got.
Bad.
So yeah, good call from him there. Now the All Blacks, I'm gonna leave the game where it is there. Before we embarked on this Rugby World Cup, so many of us had doubts that we would be knocked out in the quarterfinal stage, that the Northern Hemisphere would dominate it. The flogging that Ian Foster received, especially after our first ever loss in the pool stages to France, but we rebuilt this World Cup and we had an incredible success after round one in the pool stages before moving on into the finals. We learned our lessons against Ireland and we took on the number one ranked team in the world and the favourites to win it all. Argentina was no easy feat, but boy, we made it look like that. And our preparation for the final began with 20 minutes to go in the calls that we made then. South Africa, 14 men for nearly an entire game. One of those was our captain. A game where we could just not get into the flow of things, yet we still chased it. Maybe not taking those points would have ultimately won us the game, but we chased momentum as well in trying to turn a game around and have control over it and dominate it in a fashion as we always do. Again, we have a lot of experience leaving this team, but they should all be proud of what they've done. And saying that the All Blacks use is once you move on, you want to have made the jersey better than what you found it in. And for me, Dan Coles, he changed the game as a hooker. Aaron Smith brought a speed around the ruck to world rugby that has helped us dominate for so long. Bowden Barrett, he changed the way that you view a bench and how to drive a game alongside some of the best. We saw our young talent as well go through a lot throughout this, which makes me all the more excited as we look forward to the next 4 years. And we have a guy now that is going to step in, and I feel like there's a lot of a breath of fresh air and we can sort of all relax. And I'm really looking forward to what this team does as we move forward.
Yeah, and the team that played in this World Cup, as I know we didn't get the final result, but this was a great success. This, considering all the, you know, doubts we had and all the poor performances we had leading into this World Cup, and then even with the opening game and the warm-up game, two losses back-to-back that were pretty comfortable losses, we were written pretty well off. But you saw this group come together, and that Ireland game was absolutely unbelievable. That was that was the best team in the world on that day. I know South Africa eventually won, but if that team carried through into the final, that was the best team in the world. And it, considering where we were and the kind of representation that we had amongst the other countries as a fallen giant.
Yeah.
It was good that we got that respect back against Ireland. And then we were very unlucky not to win this whole World Cup, which would have been crazy considering what we were thought going into this World Cup.
So, I know. And the challenge that we had amongst us as well. And just one thing before I move on is there's a lot of flat or a lot of flogging going around in terms of the way, like, if we'd taken the points and yeah. all of that. But we chased the tries and we chased momentum, which is just, this is what this All Black team does. And we played it right till the death. And
yeah.
it was in a game that was so frustrating to watch. We managed to make it somewhat entertaining yeah. as well with the way that we tried to apply that pressure at the end yeah. of it. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
I am excited.
The future's bright. And the young talent, like you said, stood up. We're obviously leaving some fantastic talent in the past. We're leaving our best halfback of all time, in my opinion, in the past, and some absolute legendary stalwarts of the game. But our game's still in good hands.
Mm.
And I've been saying this for a long time. I know we haven't been playing the best, but I've always said that we have the best rugby talent in the entire world, no matter what the All Blacks results say.
Yeah.
And that's mainly due to our young talent, your Will Jordans, your Mark Taliers, your Rico Ioannis. And that's going to carry through. Mm. And we've got a fucking gun of a coach coming in.
Yeah.
The future looks bright for All Blacks footy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm very excited. Now, we're moving into the NFL, so the TAB featured bet. You'll have to keep an eye out on the boosted odds or on our Instagram page this week if you want to jump on. It's a little bit too early to be handing out slips when we haven't even got through our Monday slot of the game or the Tuesday slot of the game. So keep an eye out for that one. But for me, the player performance that impressed me this week is I'm going Austin Ekeler. So against the Chicago Bears, Ekeler finished with 29 rushing yards. But he tallied up 90 yards receiving on 7 for 8 targets and a touchdown to go along with that. We've talked about this so many times, the valuable asset that it is of a dual back. And the ground game was not working for the Chargers. But I tell you what, you put him out in the backfield and you throw him the ball and he can get it done. And for me, super impressive. When you can adapt to a style of play like that, it's just second to none.
Yeah. And what position is he really if he's catching that many balls and making that many yards off receptions and then so little on the running game? But
he had 15 carries in this as well. 15 carries for 29 yards, but they just managed to flip it and give him 90 on the receiving. Well,
credit to the Bears front line then. But
yeah.
obviously great work for him to adapt and just show his versatility, which we say it every time. It's what the running back position needs to be going forward, dual threats. I'm actually going to a wide receiver position. The player who impressed me, AJ Brown, and he was once again sensational in the Eagles shootout victory over division rivals Washington 38-31. And in AJ Brown's last six games, he has been on fire. So 9 catches for 131 yards, 9 catches for 175 yards and 2 touchdowns, 6 catches for 127 yards, 7 catches for 131 yards, 10 catches for 137 yards and a touchdown. And in this game, 8 catches for 129 yards and 2 touchdowns, making him the first player in NFL history with 125-plus receiving yards in 6 straight games.
I'm glad that you brought that up because that's what I was just fiddling with my thumbs.
I saw that post as well. I think, who posted it? NFL or ESPN, one of those sites. And I thought, damn, that is crazy. And he is probably the best blend of power and athleticism at the receiver position in the NFL. I know you've got DK Metcalf out there, but this guy does it a little better.
Exactly who I was going to bring up. When DK came into the league, I thought it was just going to be AJ Brown, sort of on steroids, quite literally. But
allegedly.
Yeah. But super impressive. And, you know, he's come over from the Titans. His name's called, I think it's on Instagram, it's called 1K Always Open.
It is.
That dude is always open. Yeah. And it's crazy. And when you've got a guy like Devontae Smith that just demands so much attention down deep, and you've got this guy that's just built like a brick shit house. You get him the ball and he's just going to break tackles. He's a gun.
Yeah, he's, like I said, the perfect blend of athleticism and power. And he's strong enough to catch balls in double coverage, like his second touchdown. Mm. And then he's skillful enough to catch one-hand snags, like his first touchdown. So AJ Brown, man, he just continues to be a blessing for my fantasy team. And yeah, he's going to be a problem for defenses going forward. But I would be remiss to not shout out CeeDee Lamb in this a player who impressed because he was outstanding. I just saw that stat from AJ Brown, so I was like, I got to put that out there because AJ Brown's been on one. But CeeDee Lamb, 170 total yards on 12 receptions for 14 targets and 2 touchdowns. Fuck, he was amazing too. So
he was going off in that first half as well. Yeah. I think both touchdowns came in the first half and a good chunk of that 100.
Yeah, it did.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And moving into the team performances that impressed us, and I'm going the Denver Broncos. 24-9 win over the powerhouse that is the Kansas City Chiefs. The Broncos got their first win over the Chiefs today in 8 years. That's 16 straight games they had lost before today. Russell Wilson, he threw 3 touchdowns of 114 yards. And if I take you back to how we're talking about all these gun quarterbacks,
yep,
and we just hope that our quarterback manages to throw 200 yards or something, that's a perfect example of that. But he was accurate with it. He got sacked 6 times today as well, which shows the kind of year that they are having.
Yeah.
They can't protect him, and the defense has been super average besides today, obviously. They sacked Mahomes 3 times, and they took 2 interceptions away on that one as well, while ruining a lot of multis, including one of mine,
yeah, me too,
which rested on the Chiefs covering the line. And I thought it was real funny just to end on. At the end of the game, they started just absolutely pumping out Taylor Swift songs as well.
So that is...
Denver Broncos, let's ride.
Yeah, Broncos country, let's ride. And that is crazy, that stat. What's the last 16 games or something?
16 games straight.
8 years. So you were a teenager the last time the Broncos beat the Chiefs.
Which is crazy because they had a great and Peyton Manning as well. So the fact that Kansas City managed to just have that over them is absolutely wild.
Yeah, that's crazy. And the team that impressed me this week, I'm going a bit of a weird one. I'm going Tennessee Titans. Firstly, slick Oilers uniforms. Yeah, I don't really like the logo, but like the color scheme of the baby blue is real nice. So shout out that. But they beat the Falcons 28-23. But yeah, like I said, a weird pick because they're 3-4 and I don't see them as a great team or a contender. But they had 2 very interesting performances in this one. An I'm still here performance and an I've arrived performance. And DeAndre Hopkins is a 5-time Pro Bowler and a 5-time All-Pro. But at 31 years old, he hasn't had a season over 750 receiving yards since 2020. So the COVID years. So he reminded everyone who he is in this game. 128 yards on 4 receptions and 3 touchdowns. So D-Hop, man, he had a great one. And who was the man throwing him the ball? Third string rookie quarterback Will Levis.
Yeah,
I think they were pronouncing it Levis. I always just read it and go Levis. The man known for looking annoyed with 2 baddies with him while slipping to the 2nd round of the draft after being a highly touted prospect. He had 238 passing yards on 65.5% completion with 4 touchdowns on debut. 3 touchdowns being absolute bombs, including a 61-yarder to Hopkins. And yeah, he has double the amount of touchdowns now than Tannehill, who has played 5 games to his 1. And with Tannehill, in my eyes, just being kind of a jag, just a guy, and Malik Willis not really showing the potential that was thought upon him, could this actually be what the future looks like for the Tennessee Titans quarterback position? What are your thoughts on Levis?
Well,
Levis.
It's going to be very interesting moving forward because there's been a lot of noise around the running back position with the trade line looming. So I think what we're going to see is a decision made very quickly in the way that they're going to progress and whether they're going to get rid of Derrick Henry and they're going to shut this down and go after that number one pick, or whether they're going to like what they see in this one, trust in the system and let it go. I don't mind it, man. Yeah. If you got the balance there and you're getting that out of DeAndre Hopkins as well, keep it going.
Yeah, and you'll be able to get some really good pieces for Derrick Henry because he still had over 100 yards in this game. I know he's been kind of more inconsistent than he was probably 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to get some pieces. And then do you have any idea what the draft pool for like wide receivers or running backs is looking like next year?
Not straight off the top of my head.
Because I know like Caleb Williams and maybe even the Sanders boys might be going in. But
yeah, there is a top prospect, the wide receiver position, that is projected to go number 2. Okay. The name doesn't come off the top of my head, but it will be interesting. And a team that I'm seeing a lot of noise on is the Baltimore Ravens making a play for Derrick Henry as well.
Oh, Jesus. So
that is crazy.
Lethal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The game that we want to feature in this upcoming round, I just wanted to touch on quickly my game that I featured last week.
Yeah.
And the Carolina Panthers, they got their first win of the season. Does Bryce Young get the crown off that one?
Well, I mean, we had in our TAB multi last week, if you remember, CJ Stroud to get over 200 yards. I think he got about 130, which is not too flash, but... We both talked about it too, that the Panthers could live for this one and Bryce Young would be really motivated to get the result in this one. So I did take the Panthers +2.5 on the money line.
Mm.
Came through. So
Crazy. Also wild as well, seeing before the game that the Texans came out and they'd said that they tried to trade up in the draft to get Bryce Young as well.
Why did they say that?
I don't know. American sports is a bit fucking wild. But this round coming up, I want to feature the Bills versus Bengals, Josh Allen versus Joe Burrows, Stephon Diggs versus Jamar Chase. Yeah. Need I say any more?
No.
High-powered offenses led by quarterbacks who are hungry to do nothing more than just blow a game open. But the last game between these two, it was actually called off to what shook the world with a really tragic event, and that was what DeMar Hamlin suffered. He returns with the Bills back into Cincinnati, where it all happened as well, with both teams really looking to find some consistency this year. So it's going to be a heck of a game pre-game to watch and the build-up to it all. And as for the game itself, it's going to be an absolute light-up show.
It's going to be a doozy. And they had, I think, a really good game in the semifinals last year of the conferences.
Yeah.
I don't know what they call them, actually. The second round, whatever they call it.
Divisionals.
Divisionals. Yeah. So, yeah, they had a really close game. And like you said, bro, talent stacked everywhere. Teams that are kind of... Well, the Bills started off pretty good and then they've had a little bit of a slump, but they bounced back nicely against the Buccaneers. The Bengals, you know, pile on the scheme curse on the 49ers and get them another loss for the season, but they've kind of bounced back off the bye and looking really good. So that's going to be a high quality game. And
like I said as well, Josh Allen, he plays to the level of whoever he's playing against.
Yeah, so it'll be a dogfight between him and Burrows. The highlight game that I'm going with, it's actually a real stacked week of games. Like I could have gone with a few options, but I'm going for the Dolphins versus the Chiefs in Frankfurt, Germany. And just basically on the entertainment potential of these two offenses, because you've got the number one offense in the Dolphins taking on the number two offense in the Chiefs, looking to see who can probably get to the top of the AFC conference and go 7-2 on the season. Also be interesting to see Tyreek Hill, who was already on 1,000 yards for the season in 8 games, go up against his old team, because you know he's going to be wanting to make some top-level plays in Germany and get a touchdown or two and really stick it to the Chiefs, saying, hey, should have kept me, man. You could be even better with your talent. I know they're still good, but, you know, Tyreek Hill, who doesn't want a Tyreek Hill? And, yeah, you may need to record it because it is an early start in Frankfurt, Germany, but these offenses are so good. Expect fireworks.
For sure. I want to see if more tight wide receivers for the rest of the year start joining the no-sock gang, because that's pulling something.
Yeah.
Top 5 power rankings last week, I had the Eagles in the number one spot, the Chiefs, followed by the 49ers, the Dolphins, and the Ravens. I've ultimately come to the same pool system or setup of teams in here, but in the number 5 position, I've got your San Francisco 49ers.
Ooh,
I'm really not impressed.
Hang on.
Yeah. I'm not impressed with how much they've dropped. But when you look across the board, the firepower that they have, the consistency in Christian McCaffrey and the defense that they have, I do think it will bounce back. It's just a slump.
And they're missing Debo as well, which is huge for them.
Exactly. In number 4 spot, I've got the Baltimore Ravens. Super impressed with what I'm seeing. Lamar Jackson doesn't give a fuck about your parlays. Doesn't give a fuck about the MVP, but he's balling at the moment.
Yeah.
The number 3 spot, I've got the Miami Dolphins. They're just an offensive team that can just absolutely explode on anyone. And the number 2 spot, I've got the Kansas City Chiefs. I've dropped them down. I just wasn't impressed with what I saw against Denver. And I just want to see consistency from them, which is what we're seeing from the team in the number 1 spot in the Philadelphia Eagles. Balanced, 2 dogs on offense, Jalen Hurts and that scrum that can just absolutely...
Well, got stopped.
Yeah, but it can tear apart anything. And I've got the Philadelphia Eagles in the number 1 spot.
It got stopped, but then they had another scrum play and they turned it into a DeAndre Swift touchdown. So if you stop it up front, you're not going to stop it out wide. But last week, my top 5 power rankings was number 1, the Kansas City Chiefs, number 2, the Philadelphia Eagles, number 3, the San Francisco 49ers, number 4, the Baltimore Ravens, and number 5, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bit of change-ups this week. I've actually got number 5, the Cincinnati Bengals, which is pretty weird considering they're a 4-3 team, but they got a really impressive victory over the San Francisco 49ers, which I probably would have kept in at number 5, but I got to value that win, man, because it was impressive. It was in San Francisco, so I'm going to take them in at number 5. At number 4, I've got the Kansas City Chiefs dropping some spots, dropping 3 spots, actually. I had them at number 1 last week. 6-2, very alarming performance against the Broncos, who, you know, they've got some talent, but they've been very terrible all year. So I've dropped them down a bit here. Number 3, Baltimore Ravens, who are now 6-2. Just continue to get wins. It wasn't a huge win against the Cardinals, but, you know, Gus Edwards, 3 touchdowns, still very impressive team, still getting the results. Number two, I got the Miami Dolphins, who didn't have a super impressive win against the Patriots either. But if I look at the two losses of all the three teams, they lost to the Eagles and the Bills. And the Bills can turn up on anyone. I know they haven't had the best season, but...
they just lost to the Patriots, so...
yeah, exactly. So the Dolphins as well beat the Broncos, put 70 on them. So I can't have the Chiefs above the Dolphins after seeing what I've seen. So that's why the Dolphins are so high.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't...
who's beating who by how much? And
it's a little cycle. Yeah.
It's like the three-way kiss in a way.
Yeah, but one team that doesn't sort of fit into the cycle, unless you somehow add the Jets in there, is the Philadelphia Eagles. I got them as the number one team. They just continue to get results. They were in a bit of trouble early against the Commanders, but still got the dub, and they do that in multiple games this season. 7-1, I got the Eagles at my number one spot.
Nice, I like it. Touchdown parlays last week, I had Devontae Smith, Travis Kelce, and Lamar Jackson. We came home on Smith. Kelce and Jackson both missed out there. But this week, I'm going to run Tyreek Hill up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Like you said, he's going up against his old team. He's wearing no socks. He's leading the league in receptions per yardage. And one thing a good friend of the show, Brad Cook, pointed out to me just the other day, Tyreek Hill is at $6.50 odds to lead the NFL by the end of the season in touchdowns.
Wow.
I don't think you can turn your nose up at that one.
No, you
can't.
I
slapped it down as quick as I could. Alvin Kamara, I've got him against the Chicago Bears. And Stephon Diggs up against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, so last week I had Tyreek Hill who came in, Mark Andrews who came in, and then I had Isaiah Pacheco of the Chiefs, which no one from the Chiefs scored. So that went down, unfortunately, 2 of 3. This week, I'm joining you. I'm going Tyreek Hill against the Chiefs. I think he's going to get a touchdown against his former team. He scored 7 in the last 8. So I think he's good for some jam there. It's a tough round of games. So I just realized I've gone a pretty safe multi in terms of options. But hopefully, it's not paying completely nothing. So I've got actually AJ Brown, who takes on the Cowboys. I think he's just been rolling. He showed some versatility and how good he can catch it with one hand or over two defenders. So yep. I like his potential to score there. And then Ja'Marr Chase, I'm actually going on the opposite side to you. I think he's been rolling lately. He scored 3 touchdowns a couple weeks ago, 1 touchdown in the game last night. His speed seems to be coming back. He's beating defenders easily again. Joe Burrow's starting to play with some confidence, even running the ball a lot. So I think Joe Burrow's back, the Bengals are back, and I think he's going to get a touchdown. So that's my 3, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, and Ja'Marr Chase.
I like that one. If you want to be a little bit naughty with your betting, partner up Ja'Marr, Stephon, Allen, and Burrows for both 200+, because I think that could be a gunfight out there. Before we move into the UFC chat, I did want to just pick your brain a little bit on the decision between Francis Ngannou and...
oh, okay.
It's just bloody skipping
Tyson Fury.
And the result that happened. Francis Ngannou obviously got the knockdown on Fury, but ended up losing in decision to him. What were your thoughts on the actual result that came of that? Because in a weekend full of controversy around officials, that one lit up straight away afterwards.
Yeah, so a split decision, I don't really have a problem with it because... I did have Tyson Fury winning more rounds, but the rounds that Francis Ngannou seemed to win, he won more clearly. And then obviously he had that 10-8 round with the knockdown in, I believe, round 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an insanely close fight, and I wouldn't have been mad if they gave it to Ngannou. Mm-hmm. I know he lost the decision, but he won that fight because he is versing what many believe is the best heavyweight boxing champion of all time, a 6'9". Agile, nimble, fainting, good boxer against a guy who's knocked people out in MMA, has been seen as kind of a sloppy but ridiculously powerful MMA striker in his first ever professional boxing fight, and he took him the limit and arguably won. A lot of people do think he did win. So very, very impressed with Francis Ngannou, and not just impressed because of the result. You look at it, he boxed fucking well.
Mm.
He was patient. He did great counter shots. Fury was trying to clinch when he felt like he was in trouble, and he would land uppercuts and body work. Francis Ngannou, absolutely outstanding performance. Blows my mind how good he was in there. Yeah. Didn't gas out either, which is like a big thing we thought might happen, being from, you know, UFC, and they get scheduled for 5 rounds, which is like 25 minutes, but he also just knocks people out real quick, so he doesn't barely ever go 5 rounds. So... insanely impressive from Ngannou.
Exactly. And I was super impressed to see that. Like you said, when a fight like that's going the distance.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were jumping on the multis that reflected in him not having the gas tank, but he proved them all wrong as well. So super impressive.
How'd you give it? Did you
I didn't manage to catch it. Right. I watched a few of the highlights, so I didn't really get an overall sort of feel for the whole thing. But when I was watching it, I was super impressed with what I actually got to see. And I'm excited to see what he does next as well.
Yeah. Well, he's got that contract with the PFL, which, you know, they don't really have any big name talent for him to fight.
He's had that contract for a minute now.
Yeah,
as well.
He's had it for, since last year, I think. So, yeah, hopefully he sticks with the boxing, because I'm incredibly excited to see him versus AJ, him versus Wilder, him versus all these other big names that, you know, is going to sell a lot of pay-per-views. And he doesn't have a bad chance after seeing that, because Tyson Fury's mopped up the floor with a lot of people and he couldn't do it with Ngannou. So huge win for Ngannou in terms of his value.
Crazy. Moving into the UFC this
UFC. week. So we've got a fight night in Sao Paulo. They go back to Brazil. Heavyweight clash between number 9 Gelton Almeida from Brazil, huge favorite at $1.18, taking on number 10 Derek Lewis from USA, $4.60 underdog. Derek Lewis taking this on short notice. It was originally meant to be Curtis Blaydes, but good on Derek Lewis for stepping in. Almeida, undefeated in the UFC, all finishes with 4 of 5 coming in the first round. If you look at his just his weight, 235 pounds, he is a small heavyweight, but he has no body fat on him and like really suspicious muscle mass. He is a big boy. He's like a Brazilian Dagestani in the way he fights, an aggressive grappling finisher with a great blast double, insane top control, and the ability to get you out of there with either ground and pound or submission. Like, he is a really talented grappler. He takes on a clash in styles in Lewis, which is one of your guys, the UFC knockout king, 14 KOs in the UFC, coming off an impressive 33-second flying knee KO of Marcos Rogério de Lima. Massive dude compared to, if you're just looking at weight compared to Almeida, obviously you look at Almeida and you go, holy fuck, he's a monster. But 280 pounds is kind of what Lewis walks around as. But he has like bumblebee athleticism where he can fly where he shouldn't for that size. He has the ability to throw jump knees and switch kicks, and then obviously massive clubbing hands that has taken many victims before. I'll start with you. You're a big Derek Lewis fan. Do you see him getting the upset?
Look, he's taking this fight on short notice, and so he should after what he did in his last fight. He didn't have to get through too much damage in that one. It's entertainment in its finest aspect. I was worried about the trajectory that he was starting to fall into and the way that a couple of his fights previously were starting to go. Exactly. And then we just saw what he did in that last fight, just absolute fireworks in it. And it's going to be interesting to see what he does leading into this one and how he approaches it
from
the get-go.
And he was looking lean too in his last fight. So he obviously got to kick up the ass from those 3 losses.
Six-pack Lewis.
Yeah. well.
Look, he's a knockout artist for a reason. He's going to get in there and he's going to throw it, and he's going to throw those haymakers. And I can't turn away from those odds and one of those things landing as well, because as soon as it lands, it's lights out. And like you said, if it's not lights out and it's on the ground, he's got those hammer fists that he just goes crazy with as well. So Derek Lewis, I want to see some post-fight antics again. Throw him on the mic, the killer, whatever he does. So I don't know what you call it after.
I don't know. The black beast, I guess.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Show me some black beast. That's where I'm going.
I mean, you're taking a great underdog, because someone with his power at $4.60, like, you can't turn it down. But I just have a real hard time seeing it, because Lewis is taking this on short notice.
Yep.
So that's even less time for him to prepare for a grappler like Almeida. Plus, he travels to Almeida's home country in Brazil. And if I'm just looking at the skills of the fighters, Derek Lewis is very cumbersome and he does, you know, topple over and he gets taken down pretty easily. He does have just get up jitsu, which he has shown in some of his fights before, where he can just use his physicality to not use the proper techniques, but just sort of push his way up off the bottom. But I don't think that's going to work against a high level grappler like Almeida, because Almeida does have a really good top control. He's real educated with his technique and how to stifle things like that. So, you know, Almeida fights have all looked the same so far. He kind of disguises a takedown off a front kick, and then he goes, does a blast double, takes them down, very patient, works his way to mount. He preys on the mistakes of the less educated strikers that he's usually taken on so far, which Derek Lewis is. And, you know, I think he's going to do it again. I think he's going to get into mount, hammer ground and pound, and then he usually waits for his opponents to, you know, either just get finished with a ground and pound or turn to their back and give up a rear naked choke. Yeah, so he has won 4 fights under UFC banner if you include the Contender Series, and they've four of his fights won under the UFC banner was by rear naked choke, doing that same thing, ground and pound to turning your back and getting the choke sunk in. And I think he's going to do the same thing here late in the first. I've actually got Jelton Almeida by round one submission via that rear naked choke.
Mm.
It'll be paying peanuts, but it's just, you know, I think the thing that'll happen here. Yeah. I'd love to see Derek Lewis get it, though, because he's entertaining. I like him. He's a funny guy.
For sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because obviously my knowledge in terms of recollection on it all isn't the flashiest, but I do... In those that little run that Derek Lewis did go on, I believe he did get submitted in one of those fights as well.
Yeah, that losses. Yeah, he lost to Sergey Spivak by a head and arm triangle. Different type of grappler, Spivak and Almeida. I think Almeida's slightly better, honestly. But yeah, it is a red flag that you can also point to. Yeah,
exactly. But $4 hand.
Yeah,
I'm going there, man.
Yeah,
I'm
take
going
a
there.
Shot. Yeah.
Now, quickly before we wrap up the show, this is going to be the last weekly sort of format show that you will get from us this year before we sort of start to fizzle out for the end of it. But we just really wanted to go through and thank a few people. So I want to thank our friends, firstly, Mark Head and Brad, for what they did with us on Today FM. It's a shame it never really blossomed into anything more, but they gave us a platform and somewhat of a hunger to sort of get back into this thing and really give it a go properly. We weren't persevering with it and trying our own sort of podcast until we came across that. And since then, we've actually pumped out 41 shows and grown and learned a lot from it. A big shout out to The Stig, that was Sam Branks this year. It was a lot of fun working alongside you. Yeah, I know you listen to each show, but having you on the show as well was really cool. Brad, thank you for coming on the show as well. Both you and Machu as well for your weekly picks and audio snippets. Machu, that was a funny one. Probably a highlight of the show, that one that you did on the basketball. Our two interviews as well with Ollie Sapsford from the Brumbies and Sir Wayne Smith as well. Yes. I thought that was real cool. It was a cool thing for us to be able to not only bring you something from us, but bring you sort of a story, a life story in a way, and something that's a little bit interesting to listen to. I know personally, I always love listening to interview podcasts and to be able to host our own one. That was pretty cool. A massive shout out to everyone who tunes in each week. It's pretty humbling to sit back and have a look at the numbers each week, receive some of your messages and stuff that we've enjoyed. And like I said, we aren't done just yet. This may be the final weekly show for the year, but we'll be popping up from time to time. So keep your eyes peeled on some stuff. But next year gets me pretty excited. It's a few ideas starting to form in my head. Hopefully we can continue to bring you a half-decent show to listen to each week. And again, we appreciate all of your support. And it's bye for now. So.
Bye for now, not bye forever. We'll see you on the other side.
Peace.